happening in America here. That's why the media will not give up this this black-white thing, because it's a means of polarizing people and preventing people from enjoying the friendship of each other. So that's the thing that you first of all have to come to grips with, is as to who you are. People don't know who they are. They think that they're white. They think they're black. They think that they're this or that, and they're none of these things. I don't know what you think you are, Emmanuel. And just let me stop for a minute and ask Craig, who does he think he is? Does he think he's white?
Well, being brought up in a situation, you know, an environment like South Africa, you know, you are brainwashed and you are thought in terms of, you know, what color your skin is. That's the way it is. And, you know, however much we may disagree with it, that's the way it is in South Africa. I regard myself as an African.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly what you are, because skin has no operative value. You know, if you stop to think about it, people are regularly flown in from various places from the world, India, China, and so on, for various medical operations and so on. And you notice that there doesn't have to be any change in the diagnostic or treatment facilities to treat these various people. They can be done with anyone. People are absolutely the same. There's no indicia that can prove that people are different. There's no way. And I have that problem with people all the time, because people look at me and say, well, as a black man, what do you think? Well, as a black man, I can't think as a black man, because I'm not a black man. I'm a human being. This is just a label this was giving us. And in this way, South Africa and America are very, very similar. They took us, who came as slaves, they gave us this identity as black, because in that situation, blacks got nothing and the whites got everything, so that was it. But to go back to an old African proverb, it's not a question of what you think I am, it's what I answer to. And so you got to start with that identity as to who you are, and know that, first of all, that you're a human being. You're not black, you're not white, you're not pink, because that you can take a kid 10 years old, hold him in your arms, and show him a color. I don't care what color it is, and you tell that kid, listen, what is it you can do that this color can't do? The kid could tell you. He'll tell you, I can sing, I can dance, I can do. A color can't do anything. A color is dead. This is just, and the same game that's being played in Africa is being played in America. Now, to get back to your particular situation, if there's anything I can do to help you, I would. And if you tell me what to do, I'll do it. But I have to tell you that if I would start to help you, that very soon there'd be people in my life that I would not welcome, and they'd be asking me questions, and I just don't know how far they would go. Because to bring people together in this world is one of the most dangerous enterprises that a person can be involved in. And you can see that by Malcolm X. As long as Malcolm X was talking black rhetoric, racist rhetoric, he was allowed to exist. But once he went to Mecca and came back, something as a universalist then, he didn't feel that people should be separated and so forth. And his life after that was very, very short. Martin Luther King, the same thing. As long as he was writing letters from a Birmingham jail and talking about the system, fine. But once he went to Chicago and started to unify the transportation workers and so forth, short life. So you've got to understand that this is a very, very dangerous enterprise, and you can do anything you want unless you do something. If you understand what I'm saying.
Sir, if I can just break in here, you're saying that, you want to break down the color barriers, but if I read you correctly, you're saying that once you actually do that in practice, it becomes very dangerous?
I'm saying that for the people from the opposition, from the people who are orchestrating this polarization and alienation in the world, that they will attack you if you do something like this. You know, I've attempted to speak at universities about this particular thing, and in some cases the heads of the universities have been notified. In some cases heads of departments have been fired merely because they allowed me to say things like this. See, but however, the truth is the truth. As I said before, if you go back to ontology, which you probably know what it is, it's a study of the nature and existence of being. That is, how do things exist? A human being cannot exist in terms of a color. A human being can only exist in terms of his moral prerogatives. And that's, of course, the whole reason why most people are very confused about what existentialism is. Because when it came to this country, the powers that be recognized that this was something that could break down this whole business of segregation and racism. And so they fought it every way they could. So the result is that most people today, if you ask them what existentialism is, they really don't know.
Okay, but to get back to Craig, I believe he's got what you're saying.
Okay.
is what is motivating him. Is that not correct, Craig?
Yes.
Well, Craig is a human being. He's a humanist and he's a humanitarian. But you see, you've got to avoid the position of the great white father looking down on a so-called black person and helping him, but realize that you are exactly like these people that you're helping, and they are exactly like you. There's no difference at all between you two. And once you now that might give some people some problems, but if you're biblical, or you look in the Bible, you look at Acts 17:26. It says, "Of one blood I have made all nations." That's what the Bible says. So you know, you shouldn't have a problem with that. But yet in America we have a very, very serious problem. And even in stations like Channel 13, PBI, and so forth, they will allow you to conduct this controversy as long as you do it in the framework of this dichotomy, as long as you talk about be nice to people who are different from you. Well, that's a lie. The people that you're not being nice to are exactly as you. There's no difference at all. And, of course, it's borne out from time to time. During an earthquake or during a war, people say, well, people got together and so forth. People are always the same.
Well, now, you know, what you're saying could sound negative in a way, but I know what you're saying. You're saying people are the same, they have the same potential, the same rights and everything like that, but of course we're all different on the inside, right?
Well, why are we different on the inside?
We're all individuals.
Oh, well, of course. Well, right. That of course, obtains even within the group, within any group. You have variations. But basically, the same, the people are the same, and people
right.
react the same.
Right, of course.
Okay?
I respond to that, Emmanuel.
Go ahead. We're going to open up the line. Thanks very much for calling, sir.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Go ahead, respond.
I think we're all in agreement that everyone is equal. We're all humans, and that's the basic issue. Forget about the color of the skin. That means absolutely nothing. The governments in South Africa, you know, agree that everyone's equal. But the reason why we have apartheid is that so one colored skin, one race, can be in a superior position to the other. The black people are in a subservient position to advance the power of the whites. The government of South Africa knows exactly, you know, biologically everyone's equal. They're not stupid. But they, you know, put out this, you know, propaganda or legislation that black people are subservient and therefore should not have a right to vote or have any say in the government. And therefore you have the whites in power. It's a political thing. You know, everyone knows people are equal.
And I think that notion scares a lot of people.
The frightening thought.
The caller brought up an interesting point, though, in parallels in the U.S. Do you see many of them?
Quite honestly, sometimes on a more subtle level. In South Africa, you know, racism is institutionalized. You know, it's in the legislation. You know, it's legal. Apartheid's legal. People are separated according to their race, and it's written in the law books. In America, this is not so. Everyone's supposed to be equal. But now and again, you know, you do have instances of racism, which are pretty scary, like, you know, the Howard Beach episode, etc. So that's not a governmental or legal thing. That's just like basic prejudice, you know, which exists amongst people. And it's awful, but then you get that in any society. The difference with South Africa is that it's legalized.
Okay, let's take another call. Our telephone number is 212-279-3400. You're listening to WBAI in New York. We're speaking with Craig Demmer, who is a South African here in New York, who is facing deportation by the United States because... apparently, they are not satisfied that, when I say they, I mean they, the United States government. I say that increasingly, you know, they don't represent me, so it's kind of a weird thing to call the United States they. But in any event, the United States government, it says that Craig Demmer does not meet the refugee status. He is not able to seek political asylum in this country because he cannot prove that he will be persecuted if he returns home to South Africa after refusing to serve in the armed forces, when in fact he faces, was it 6 years in prison?
6 years and up to 10 years for advocating a resistance to apartheid and to conscription. also a pretty lengthy sentence, and God knows what else for.
And I believe
going public and opposing apartheid.
If I'm not mistaken, one of the arguments that the U.S. State Department said was it the State Department that ruled?
They have given absolutely no opinion, but in previous cases they have, given various opinions.
Okay, well, I saw this somewhere in the New York Times article that since the penalty here in the United States is very similar for people...
Oh, yes. One of the arguments is that people who resist the draft in America get about 5 years imprisonment, which is almost the same as in South Africa. You get 6 years.
So it's not looked upon as undue punishment.
Yeah. The thing is... serving in the American armed services, armed force, is quite different to serving in the South African military.
I can imagine.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Americans will be serving in the military to maintain democracy, and the South African military, you're there to maintain the system of apartheid.
I see. Now,
fundamental difference. So the State Department does not acknowledge that. The South African military is totally different to the American military. If you oppose, the draft, that's one issue. But if you oppose apartheid, that's something else.
That's true. Another thing that I believe was raised was the fact that everybody there gets the same sentence. So... you cannot prove that you individually are being persecuted, since everybody that does what you do gets the same sentence. It seems like, mumbo-jumbo to me.
It is a lot of mumbo-jumbo. It's just to make life very difficult, actually. But I have gone public, and I've appeared on TV and through various media, expressing my opposition to apartheid and advocating resistance to serving in the military and anything that will involve the maintenance of apartheid. And for these activities, I have a great deal of fear that I will be thrown into jail, not only for refusing to serve in the military, but under all sorts of other legislation that's in existence in South Africa. Encourage economic sanctions against South Africa, and that's another 10-year sentence that could be imposed on me. I advocate resistance to serving in the South African military. That's another 10 years. It's a state of emergency in South Africa. People can get thrown into jail for wearing a Free Mandela t-shirt, and that's happened.
And how long has Mandela been in jail now?
Oh, I think for 20 years, since the 60s. 20-odd years.
More than that, it's inconceivable that somebody could be in jail for so long.
It's ridiculous. So what's so ironic is, recently in September, 9 African leaders were released from jail, ANC leaders. One of them was Walter Sisulu. And, President de Klerk, he wanted all this applause from the world community. Oh, look, I've released all these prisoners. And do you know Walter Sisulu's son? He's a journalist, is banned. He cannot practice as a journalist. And he's under house arrest. Has the government done anything about that? He's still under house arrest. The father's been freed, but his son's under house arrest.
I think a lot of it depends upon publicity.
How much is
talked about?
I think most people in South Africa, black people, are very, very cynical, with good reason, with regard to the changes that our president's made. He's doing this all just for the publicity. It's just due to international pressure. The economy has deteriorated incredibly as a result of these economic sanctions, and he's just so desperate to seek approval. And he's getting it. Unfortunately, he's getting it. People are being lulled into this false sense of security that things are really changing and things are getting wonderful in South Africa. But I'm just mentioning all these things that are still happening in South Africa. The nationalist government has been in power since 1948. What people may argue, we have to proceed cautiously or slowly with change. Change can't happen overnight. My argument is that the nationalist government has had 40 years to give people the right to vote in South Africa.
Another thing that that we have lost sight of here in the United States is the, you mentioned the state of emergency still exists, but the state of censorship. Every time we read a newspaper story in the New York Times or, over the Associated Press or see it on ABC News or something, that report has been affected by censors in some way. Now, there used to be a little thing at the beginning of every story saying this, but they've stopped running that little... piece that tells you this story has been censored, and I think the result of that is that people think it's over. People think there is no censorship, and what they're getting is the real story, when in effect they're not at all.
That's totally true. In the beginning in South Africa, when the state of emergency went into effect, all the South African newspapers left big blanks on all the columns on the paper, in the papers, indicating that this is where their story would be, but because of government censorship, they couldn't print the story. And same as in America, there'd be a little byline saying that due to government censorship, not all the facts could be printed. But this is, the censorship has been going on for a number of years now, and for some reason, you know, people forget that there's still censorship, and you know the bylines have been dropped, and we get such a little dribbling of you know, information from South Africa, but the situation is exactly the same in South Africa. There's still strict censorship. Emmanuel, you asked me before I appeared in the show if there was anyone in South Africa that would like to be in the show as well, and I mentioned that I would be very afraid to ask someone in South Africa to appear on the show because it's forbidden. And they would be subject to, you know, harassment or God knows what other fate for speaking out against the government while they're still in South Africa.
That's certainly true.
Shows you so much about the censorship in South Africa.
One quick question, and I'll go right back to the phones. A black person at your age, would they be subjected to any kind of military obligation?
No. It's purely voluntary. It's only compulsory for white people. You know, the government would never make the black people serve in the military, because obviously why should they, to perpetuate the system of apartheid? You know, it's totally illogical, you know.
It is, but at the same time, that practice is in itself an admission of the true intent of their system.
Exactly.
Now, what happens, I'm just curious, what happens to a black person that does volunteer for the military?
There are reserves. They serve in limited capacities. They're not usually on the front lines. We have a portion of black people that serve in the South African military. It's a nice, secure job. You know, they pay well. I don't know if those people really have too much of a conscience. I would feel very, very, concerned, you know, being a black person and going into a township and raiding a black house. I would feel, just as a white person, I'd feel very guilty doing that, but I don't know. I can't really speak for other people.
You're listening to WBAI New York City. Our number is 212-279-3400. We're speaking with Craig Demmer, a white South African here in New York who has opposed the draft and faces a 6-year jail sentence and also faces being forcibly returned to South Africa by the United States. Actually, you face quite a bit more than 6 years if all those things you were mentioning before come to fruition. I believe something like 30 years in jail for advocating the things. This radio program would probably carry a couple of years.
It probably would.
Okay, well, hopefully they won't get a tape of it. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. Is anyone there? Occasionally that happens. Our listeners fall asleep, and we're sorry that we keep the phones ringing so long, but you know, at least we don't pick them up and put you on hold like other radio stations do. You don't have to pay for it until we pick up the phone. The only thing we ask is that you stay awake. Good morning.
Hi. Good evening. Hi. I wanted to ask. Let me turn on the radio. Wanted to ask the South Africans a question. It's just so interesting. One is, how does your family react to this back in South Africa, and its publicity about you? And two, regarding the AIDS march, things like that. In South Africa, how would a group like ACT UP, how would that be tolerated? Or someone who's just plainly just openly homosexual but not a political activist, how would they react to that in South Africa?
Go ahead, Craig.
Okay, those are two issues. First one I'll deal with is regard to my family and their reaction. I didn't tell them when I came over why I was coming over and what I did, and that was seek political asylum, because I knew the way they felt, and I just knew it would create more, you know, harder feelings between us. They learned about it, as I said, a while ago, when they opened the papers in South Africa and read my story. It's created a rather difficult situation, because we represent, you know, different ends of, you know, opinion, political spectrum of opinion. You know, we're 9,000 miles apart. I haven't seen them for 5 years, and I love my family dearly. You know, it's very hard. It's really hard. You know, what can I say? The other issue you mentioned, like ACT UP demonstration, that's getting a little bit off the topic, because that's not really racism and what I'm speaking about, and that's apartheid. But you know, it's very difficult in South Africa to demonstrate. Something like that would not be tolerated in South Africa whatsoever, regardless of the fact that it's to do with AIDS or, you know, that doesn't matter what the topic is. You know, you cannot go and chain yourself to pews or you walk along the street with a placard. That's totally forbidden. It's
what would
illegal.
They do?
They throw you into jail, detention without trial.
But what if a lot of people had been? I'm not just talking about one or two.
Yes, a lot of people. Hundreds. You know, during the state of emergency, hundreds of, like, school children have been put into, you know, trucks and herded off to prison.
But I'm talking about white establishment people if they protest.
They are just as liable under the, you know, legislation to be put into jail for, you know, anything like that.
I see. It sounds very cruel over there.
It's a very repressive system in South Africa, you know.
How do they deal with AIDS in itself? I'm just curious. I hate to take you off the topic, but I'm just... Because, I mean, we hear so much about the blacks in South Africa. I'm curious about all these issues. How do they deal with AIDS and things like that, and how does the Jewish population fare over there and things like that?
I'm going to find it rather difficult to answer that question because I haven't been back, you know, for over 4 years now, and a lot has happened, I think, you know, during that time. So I don't know if I really am in a position to address that question. In South Africa, the way things are, you know, they don't encourage dissent or, you know, to express your opinion. Anything that's in opposition to the government's thinking is met with, you know, imprisonment or, you know, harassment or house arrest. It's a very repressive system.
I see. And just one last question, I know, because I don't want to keep the lines tied up. I know there's a difference between the Afrikaner whites and the English settlers. Is there a big difference? And also, what's your family?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. You know, racism is so ingrained in South Africa that it even affects people of the same race. In South Africa, we have two languages, official languages, and that's English and Afrikaans. I'm from an English background. The English people in South Africa tend to be more liberal. And my family's not. They're an exception, I suppose. And then you have the Afrikaners, and they form the bulk of government supporters. The government of South Africa is made of, you know, white minority, and most of them are Afrikaans, of Afrikaans descent.
I see. Well, thank you very much, and good luck, and you have a lot of courage.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. 279-3400. You know, that caller did touch upon a good point there as far as what would happen if a lot of people demonstrated. Now, you say they would all be thrown into jail. Fine. You know, that's something I would probably expect in South Africa. But at what point do things start changing? Because that's what's going to have to happen in order for things to change. People are going to have to continually march in the street. I mean, it's happening in Eastern Europe. It's happened in the United States in the 60s and 70s. Eventually, if anything is going to change, it's going to have to be from within. For the most part, obviously, we can exert a lot of pressure here, and other countries can, you know, exert a lot of pressure. But things have to change there. There have to be organized demonstrations, primarily on the black side, but certainly the white side would move this forward a lot faster if something was happening on a continual basis. At what point do you think things will start to change?
You know, Manuel. Things were really getting really bad in South Africa in the early 80s. You know, there's increasing opposition and dissatisfaction with, you know, the whole system that exists in South Africa. And as a result, the government reacted to that whole, you know, expression of, you know, what the people felt by imposing a state of emergency. And it still exists.
And what does that state of emergency allow them to do?
It allows them to do absolutely nothing.
I'm talking about the government.
Oh, the government?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. It allows the government to suppress all opposition to apartheid, to quell any internal disorder, anything that's viewed as subversive or in opposition to government policy is met with imprisonment or harassment, house arrest, etc. The state of emergency's purpose is to impose order in South Africa by whatever means necessary, and that may include, you know, shooting women and children, which has happened. Whatever means is required. So the president at the moment has made a few changes, and these are not, I believe, terribly genuine. It's as a result of international pressure. But the ironic thing is that I don't think it's really, you know, appeasing the black people of South Africa. They know exactly what the situation is. They know that, you know, President de Klerk's motives are not that genuine. So I don't know how long it's going to, you know, quell, you know, their unrest or dissatisfaction.
Okay, let's take another call. Good morning.
Good morning. Is this WBAI?
That's what it is. You're on the air.
Hi. Okay, I wanted to ask about something that a previous caller had addressed, and that is about support among the African American community for Mr. Demmer's cause. I'll hang up and listen to an answer.
Okay, thanks for calling. Did you understand the question?
I understood that. I just appreciate any support, you know, that people could give. I think the best thing, if they'd be interested in, you know, expressing support, would be to contact Lucas Guttentag, Guttentag, and he's with the ACLU in New York, and, you know, submit any, you know, letters of support or, you know, any assistance that you'd like to give. Address it to Lucas Guttentag, the ACLU, and I'm sure the number would be in the phone book.
Okay, you don't have the the address or the number?
I don't have the address, but I have the telephone number.
Okay, give out the telephone number.
212-944-9800.
Okay, and a lot of people calling that, offering support of any kind, would certainly be helpful to your cause, I imagine. You know, they would be able to tell you where you can best channel your energies. And I know a lot of people are upset about this, but we're frustrated because what do we do? You know, we're here in New York. What do we do to solve the situation?
What
people,
you know, that American citizens could really do is, you know, contact the congressman and you know, tell them about, you know, what I'm going through, my plight, and people in my position, and maybe, you know, go through the, you know, the system that you have in America. You know, everyone has a congressman in the area, and if they could, you know, just let their congressman know about what's going on.
And don't stop there, you know, because if we help Craig here, if Craig wins his battle, okay, that's something. But there's still the system over there which needs to be changed. Would you say the same methods would work for that?
Yes, I mean, I would love, you know, people to advocate, you know, that the American government continues, you know, economic sanctions against South Africa and continues to apply pressure on the South African government. People can also write to the newspapers, you know, like the New York Times, the Daily News, New York Post, you know, expressing, you know, their, you know, opposition to apartheid, and, you know, if they would like, you know, support for my case, that would definitely be appreciated. Whatever means, you know, that, you know, people in this democratic government that, you know, exists in America, you know, have at their disposal, you know, to use it. Because, you know, it's a very, I know this sounds terribly corny, but, you know, this is a very, very, you know, it's a wonderful situation that we have in America. It's a democracy, and people have channels and avenues to go through, you know, to express, you know, however they feel. And this doesn't exist in many countries in the world.
Now, before this came to a head, and let's say that things work in your favor and you're able to stay here, what have you been doing and what will you do to counter apartheid in New York?
I've been working as a social worker throughout this time, you know, in New York, and I've been working with some organizations, you know, the World Council of Churches. I will do my best, and I'm doing right now all I can to educate people in America about the conditions in South Africa, what's going on, because I feel that the black people have absolutely no voice in South Africa. And I feel, you know, I'm going to try and do all I can to give them a voice. I know that I'm a white person, and I really cannot, you know, feel exactly what they're going through, but it's better than nothing. I feel that they need to be heard. I think we're just hearing a one-sided story from the South African government lately, and I'm going to do anything possible I can to just let people know, you know, what's going on in South Africa.
I don't mean to press you on this too much, but there are people out there that might say, yeah, you know, I want to do what Craig is doing and educate people. How specifically do you educate people on South Africa?
The best thing they can do, you know, is to, you know, write to the newspapers, you know, expressing, you know, their support, you know, for opposition to apartheid. They can contact organizations like Trans Africa. This is a wonderful organization in America, and it's like a watchdog organization, and they exclusively monitor the situation in South Africa, and they have, you know, like news bulletins and newsletters that they publish on South Africa. So if they want to learn more about South Africa, an organization like Trans Africa would be of assistance to them. That's headed by Randall Robinson. Another great source, if they want to learn more about South Africa, is a television program which is on the air every week, called South Africa Now, and I was on it a couple of weeks ago, and this is on Channel 13 on Saturdays, and it's a half-hour program, usually at 12:30 noon time.
Who produces that? Is that produced here in New York?
Produced in New York, and it's aired throughout America and Zambia and I think Mozambique as well. And if you know people want to learn more about South Africa, you know, firsthand or on the TV, you know, that's a great source.
Okay, let's take another call. 279-3400. Good morning. Yes, it's you. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to know, I'm very upset about the censorship in the newspapers, and so for me this is a great opportunity to hear from a white man, even though he was university trained, as he put it, in South Africa. What exactly is the inertia? What is it in the white community? I know it's a minority in South Africa. What is it that they will feel they'll have to give up to abolish the system? I hear it's predominantly Afrikaners who run the government, this and that, but it seems to me here in America it's only the oppressed community screaming and the external forces that have even brought this into examination, the idea that apartheid is wrong. It seems to me that there must be a community of whites there that would have been content to just let the thing go along. So I'm asking him, because our newspapers are censored, what is it, like is there a middle-class white community here, or is it all just leaders and then you have this slave class? Like, what is it, for our understanding here, because we won't get it to the newspapers, what are the whites in South Africa that aren't in the government structure, that aren't the extremely wealthy? What is it that they're going to be reluctant about to abolish apartheid? I'll just hang up. It's a great show.
Thanks for calling.
That's a very good question. Whites in South Africa enjoy one of the highest standards of living in the world. Absolutely one of the highest, and that's because of the system. The black people are, you know, used to further the interests of the white people. It's just as simple as that. White people in South Africa are given so many different perks that black people are not given. I'll give you an example, like, you know, wage differentials. In South Africa, social workers and teachers, if they're white, earn much higher salaries than black people, regardless of their education. They can have the same degree from the same university, but just because they are black or white, they would be given a different salary. White people have much better social services. White children do not have to pay for their schooling. Black children do, and for an inferior schooling as well, I may add. There's a lot of support in the, you know, for whites. You know, there are lots of perks. The government gives assistance to whites. They just have such a great system set up to benefit the white people. By oppressing the black people, you know, the black people are the ones that are paying for the system set up for the white people.
You know, it's interesting mentioning the education. One of the propaganda tapes that I got from South Africa recently, they were going over the test scores of whites versus blacks, and they were noticing with mock dismay that the black scores seemed to be getting lower and lower. And this could only be attributable to all the unrest and the fact that the people are paying more attention to throwing stones and to improving their grades, and of course it's only going to hurt them in the long run.
Sure.
They, you know, what's funny is they were sounding so incredibly honest, open and honest. Yes, we have a problem here. We must acknowledge it. It's too bad these people just don't realize, you know, what is beneficial to them and what will hurt them in the long run. And, you know, if the situation wasn't so tragic, you would laugh.
It is, which makes it so ironic that they're publishing a newsletter and saying, oh, there's a problem. Well, why don't they change it? Why don't they just give, you know, all... We have separate education departments in South Africa. We don't have just one department of education, like in America. We have a department of education for whites, a department of education for Indians, a department of education for colors, a department of education for Africans. Now, this is quite mind-boggling. And each department of education is given a different amount of money for education of the children. The whites are given the most, and the blacks are given the least. Indians are given more than the black people. This is the way it's set up.
What is your prediction as to what's going to happen there?
I've been waiting for this time bomb to go off for a couple of years now. With the state of emergency, they've managed to keep things under control by all these horrific means. Now they're using a slightly different tactic, which is making these few changes. They're going to hope that it's going to appease the black people temporarily and also gain them international favor. How long this is going to work remains to be seen. I know for a fact that the black people are regarding these changes with a lot of caution, and they do not regard them as terribly genuine or significant. I would hope that the international community views it the same way as the black people view it, because they are, you know, after all, are the ones that are most affected by it.
We're speaking with Craig Demmer, who is a South African here in New York, who has chosen not to enlist in the draft, as every white South African must do. And as a result, he faces 6 years in prison. He doesn't want to go back to South Africa. The United States government is on the verge of forcing him to go back because they do not recognize his status as a political refugee. And I believe that decision, if it does go against you, could come as early as May?
Yes, I have a court date set for May. I have a 5-day trial set for May in June, early June.
I see. Well, hopefully we'll be updating people on that as it draws a little closer. I'm going to take a few more phone calls. Craig, I want to thank you for staying up so late. I know you have to be at work tomorrow morning.
That's my pleasure, believe me.
Okay, let's go through a few more of these calls. You have the switchboard all lit up. Obviously, there's a tremendous interest in this, and I think most people want to know, you know, what is it like going through what you're going through, and, you know, if not but for the grace of God, go on, you know, that kind of thing. They want to know what it feels like to be in your shoes, and they can identify with you.
Emmanuel, it's been so difficult. I've had doubts many, many times. I mean, I've had, the State Department refuse to renew my work authorization while my case was pending. I've missed my family terribly. I have no home. I don't have any of my friends anymore I used to have. It's very, very difficult, and I don't know how I've stuck with it, but I have, and I think that I have to do something to help those people in South Africa. I hate to sound paternalistic or anything, but, you know, people in South Africa, black people, just do not have a voice, and what I'm going through, as I said before, is absolutely nothing to what people have gone through for years in South Africa. So I'm hanging in there, you know, and I'm just hoping that, you know, things will turn out okay, and, you know, people recognize that the system in South Africa is really terrible and really needs to be changed.
Okay, let's take another call. Good morning.
Hi, are we over here?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Oh, I see. I have to turn my radio off.
Yeah, it would help.
Yeah, I didn't know you were on delay. Are you interested in, you said something about wanting to get your situation publicized. Are you interested in publicizing it to some of the daily newspapers that we have in New York City?
Yes.
I know some reporters. If you're interested, I know of some of them who work for the daily newspapers, and I know one who works for New York Magazine.
At the moment, any sort of support would be, you know, grateful. I had an article printed on my situation a couple of weeks ago, as you mentioned, Emmanuel, in the New York Times, and I've appeared on a couple of television programs, but, you know, all the support I can get would be absolutely wonderful, you know, and if people have any contacts, that would be great, and if they could, you know, contact Lucas Guttentag at the ACLU at 212-944-9800, with any information, that would be much appreciated.
Okay, and what's your name?
My name?
Yeah.
My name is Craig Demmer.
Okay, because I can contact some of the people I know, and maybe they'll be picking it up. But you said you've had something in the New York Times, right?
That was a couple of weeks ago, yes.
I don't have to contact my friend in the Times if you already had something, because they might not want to do someone else's, you know.
Yes, yes.
Did you hear about a recent decision? It was publicized on many of the black radio stations in New York about some police officers who were acquitted of killing six blacks.
Mm-hmm. I think Emmanuel, if I'm corrected, stand to be corrected, it was the same situation you mentioned, Emmanuel, in the beginning of the program?
Well, the article I read was policemen acquitted of killing three blacks, but either there's
the
two situations.
Same incident, is it?
I don't think it's the same incident, well, unless you...
This must be a different incident, because this one was, they were acquitted a couple of days ago, the one I'm referring to, and this was six blacks, including a couple of children. And according to the radio stations, the judge said it's all right to kill blacks as long as it's within the law. You don't know anything about that then, right?
No, I don't know anything about that, but all I do know is that, you know, since 1985, you know, over 1,000, you know, men, women, and children have been killed or tortured in South Africa. So, you know, these reports, you know, in the media the last couple of weeks come as no surprise to me, absolutely no surprise.
Oh, because that was something that I was hoping you might know something about, because unfortunately the radio just does like little sound bites and they don't really give you ample information.
The fact that I don't know just shows how effective government censorship in South Africa is working.
Now, also, I'm wondering, have any of your friends the people you were growing up with or people you were friendly with before you left, do you know if they were interested also in leaving South Africa as you had done? Or were they too afraid to, or were they not as liberal, or what?
Most of my friends were pretty liberal at university, but I think a lot of them had an investment in remaining in South Africa. You know, white people have a great system there. You know, you graduate from university and you have a very cushy, wonderful career planned, you know, that lies ahead. You're well paid, etc. Most of my friends studied law or medicine, and they knew that they could just go and serve their 2 years and come out and then start a wonderful career and live a very privileged existence. So they would have to give up a lot, you know, for their beliefs. I don't judge anyone, you know, I'm in no position to do that, you know, everyone's different, but none of my friends, you know, did what I did.
But I'm curious, if you got sent back to South Africa and you were imprisoned, right?
Mm-hmm.
This may sound, if this is too sensitive, you don't have to answer, but do you think you'd be tortured?
There have been reports, you know, documented cases of torture and solitary confinement for people, you know, that have been imprisoned as regards their opposition to apartheid. I would not like to, you know, test the authorities in South Africa, but it's entirely likely that they could do something like that. You know, these people have tortured and killed children.
I know. I was just wondering, though, if you thought that they might do that to you.
I'm desperately afraid that they could do something like that, because I've been very public in my denunciation of the South African government. And I'm now, you know, doing something to destroy the image they're trying to create.
And whether they do or not, it's a torture of another form, you know, very subtle torture where you just keep wondering to yourself, what are they going to do to me? You know, and they don't have to do anything for the torture to be very effective.
Well, I have, you know, a very blatant, you know, prosecution available, which is I'll be imprisoned, and then I have all sorts of other things like harassment, you know, limited job opportunities, you know, if I had to go back to South Africa. I wouldn't be very employable by the civil service.
The only thing I was thinking is, because I know how irrational politicians can be, do you think it's conceivable that they might try to have you publicized as an attempt to overthrow the government or as a possible spy or just something irrational like that?
Well, you know, the government in South Africa is very irrational. It's very hard to understand their whole motive, you know, in operating. But they probably are regarding me now as a thorn in their side. And, you know, that alone is enough grounds, you know, for them to, you know, put me in jail or place me under house arrest. You know, God forbid, you know, knows they've done worse things to people on lesser grounds.
I believe the caller asked if they've hassled your family in any way.
My father is... he's employed by the South African military. You know, he serves in the Air Force in a civilian capacity. And he spoke to my mom recently, and she said that he has been harassed by some colleagues who heard about my case. And that's one of my fears. I really didn't want, you know, to go public in South Africa because I knew my family would be affected. You know, it's not easy. You know, I don't want that to happen.
Let me just throw a theoretical situation out to you. If somehow strings were pulled and you were given a promise that you could go back to South Africa and not face any jail time, what would you do?
I don't know. I really don't know. it'd be great. I wouldn't be sentenced to jail. You know, that'd be wonderful.
Thanks, I could
see my friends and family again. But then I'd also, you know, I'd face that persecution. I'd face, you know, the harassment. It'd be very difficult for me to get a job. You know, there are lots of people in South Africa that are very conservative and are definitely, you know, in opposition to, you know, my, you know, views, white people. The whole climate in South Africa would not be very, very, you know, comfortable, you know, if I went back just amongst people that I know and family and you know, work people.
Are you saying the climate wouldn't be acceptable even if there was no harassment?
There was no prison sentence that awaited me. There would probably be something else. You know, recently, a couple of months ago, a South African came over and received political asylum, a similar case to mine. And he received asylum on the grounds that he faced persecution if he went back home. And the work area, you know, he... He was granted asylum.
Oh, he was granted asylum.
Granted asylum a couple of months ago because he demonstrated that if he returned to South Africa, the civil service would be prejudiced and, you know, placing him in a job because he opposed apartheid. So, you know, if I went back and I wouldn't get a prison sentence, I would be subject to other forms of persecution.
But I'm saying, ironically, if the U.S. didn't grant you asylum, you might consider just going to Canada and starting the process all over again.
That's a possibility.
Just don't go back just because the U.S. says you don't. You can go to Canada, and I guess from Canada you can possibly go to Mexico. I mean, just keep going if the government don't grant you asylum. But whatever you do, don't feel compelled that you have to go back. I'm sure you could be creative about, you know, your survival.
Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to take one day at a time. You know, those are alternatives in the future that I could look at.
Definitely consider that, because when you think about it, you literally don't have to go back.
Well, usually when you go through deportation hearings, you know, the State Department orders you to go back to the country where you came from. But sometimes you have a choice. You can designate a country that you wish to go to.
That
is like something left in the future. I cannot deal with that yet. My aim now is just to fight to stay in America and hopefully, you know, spread the word about what's happening in South Africa. I'm doing this for a purpose. I want to educate people, you know.
All right, good luck, and I'll call my friend at New York Magazine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. And if people listening who have those kind of connections can do all they can, not just for this case, but for anything that... that requires justice, you know, whether it's the South African issue in general, whether it's the AIDS issue, whether it's anything that involves justice, involves thinking, that involves action of some sort, because we're the ones that are out there. We're the ones that can make the difference, and we're the ones that have to make the difference. Okay, I'm going to give Craig a chance to get a drink of water or something. We've been going for quite a while here. We have about another 16 minutes, so we're going to take a 3-minute break. We'll go right back to the phones, and hopefully we'll get to everybody who's waiting. We're speaking with Craig Demmer, who is a South African here in New York, who was a draft evader, a South African draft evader, facing 6 years in prison if he is sent back to South Africa, as the United States government is currently trying to do. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Those are the Jam, or those were the Jam. I guess they broke up now. Song called Running on the Spot. And again, like I'm always doing, if you were paying attention to the lyrics, you would hear some neat stuff in there. That's why I like music that means something. You know, music always means something in itself, but it's always good when there's that extra bonus of meaningful words. I was hoping we'd make real progress, but it seems we have lost the power. Any tiny step of advancement is like a raindrop falling into the ocean. We're running on the spot. Always have, always will. We're just the next generation of emotionally crippled. And hopefully we're a bit better than that. I think we are. I think we're bringing things into the limelight that deserve to be there. We're realizing our potential. We're realizing the power that people have, whether it's people in New York, whether it's people in Cape Town, whether it's people in any corner of the world. We can make a difference. We can change things, and we just have to start. That's something that I'd like to be able to address in this and future programs. Well, we are speaking with Craig Demmer, who is a draft evader from South Africa here in New York, and we only have a few more minutes left. Our phone number is 279-3400. Craig, you ready for some more calls?
Yep.
Okay, let's go to them. Good morning.
Hi there. Hi, Craig. Hi, Manuel. I wish to offer my support as a Vietnam-era draft resister who faced imprisonment here. Let's see. You haven't mentioned it, but there is an organization in South Africa called the End Conscription Campaign, an organization of white draft resistors that had been banned under the emergency and unbanned itself a few months ago and is now once again functioning openly in South Africa.
I'm not too sure if they are illegitimate. I did know that they were banned, and I'm not too sure if they've been unbanned. I don't know about that.
Unbanned them. They unbanned themselves.
They unbanned them. Well, and
well, good,
doesn't
good
really
for them.
There would be much in South Africa, unfortunately. You don't unban yourself. The government banned
them. I understand. Since they were decided to.
I think the group had sort of a rebellious sense when they did that. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Sounds like something the Yippies would have done.
Yeah. They're, I know they're supported by the War Resisters League here in New York and other groups in the U.S. Also, Emmanuel, you asked about the U.S. High technology corporations, didn't you, a while back?
Yes, you know I'm interested in that kind of stuff.
Some information. Information I have may be a bit dated, but essentially, apartheid can't be maintained without the cooperation of U.S. and British and other multinationals and conglomerates, especially the high technology companies. For example, the passes, the identity cards have photographs on them taken with Polaroid cameras. Although Polaroid, I think, officially isn't dealing with South Africa anymore, they still probably are. IBM, through a ruse, sold off their South African subsidiary. So now there's simply, instead of a subsidiary, there's simply another company in South Africa that buys and imports IBM computers. If you have an IBM computer and you need parts for it, you can still buy it in South Africa. Control Data Corporation has a reputation as being a liberal company here in America. Well, they've had a gigantic contract with the South African Education Department. Now, I'm not sure which part of the South African Education Department, but they had developed a massive educational system to essentially culturally reinforce apartheid in South Africa. And the software that was developed in conjunction with that, they're marketing here in the U.S. I can go on listing one after another of major U.S. High-tech corporations. Without whose help, apartheid would not stand.
Okay, well, I'm glad you did, and I hope other people find more.
The Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility, I know, had a meeting on this 3-4 years ago that I was at, and I know there are people who are at least doing heavy research into this area.
Okay, well, I hope you share that with us. Send it into BAI or just publicize it in any way you can.
I'm trying.
And that's what we have to do, you know. We have to stay educated. We have to keep in communication. Thanks very much for calling.
Good luck.
Okay. 279-3400. Good morning. Go ahead. Is anyone there? Another one fell asleep. Oh, well, I guess it happens. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I almost fell asleep.
Okay, well, I'm glad you didn't.
I wanted to ask, was it Brett?
Craig.
Pardon?
Craig Demmer.
No. A few years ago, I read about there were a great deal of South African males who were leaving the country because they really felt, like you, that they were sitting on a powder keg, but they had gone to Britain. Some of them had taken their families. Is that still going on?
That did happen in the 70s, particularly England and the Netherlands granted political asylum to people in my position. Since then, there have been fewer cases, documented cases of people applying for political asylum. I think I was the first one in the 80s to apply for political asylum. I don't have any documentation on how many people are leaving South Africa, but I'm sure that's an alternative available to people. Lots of people have, white males have relatives living in England all over the world, and they may have, you know, access to, you know, a citizenship of another country by virtue of having relatives living in another country. So they don't have to go through a political asylum process. They can just go to another country because they have, you know, a mother or father or a sister living in England or wherever, or Canada. I don't have any family living anywhere but in South Africa, so my only means was by seeking political asylum.
Plus, I think there's a difference between leaving the country because you're afraid of the powder keg and leaving it because you're disgusted with it.
Yes.
You know, a very big difference.
I'd like to think that I'm making a stand. I could have gone into exile. I could have gone to another country, you know, maybe England, and I think I would have been received maybe a little bit more warmly than I have been in America. And I could have gone through it all very quietly, and nothing could have happened, and I would have got my, you know, citizenship and lived happily ever after. But, you know, I've gone through all the legal channels, and I've made a stand throughout this whole thing, and, you know, I'd like to educate people and make them aware of what's going on in South Africa. I'm doing this for a whole purpose, not just for me.
I think you've gotten through to a lot of people tonight. I certainly hope so. Any other questions from our caller?
Yeah. Would it help at all if we sent letters to, you know, places like Citibank or Manufacturers Hanover to protest the policies?
Sure. I mean, I think ideally the best place to send letters would be to your congressman, you know, so that they could bring this up, that, you know, sanctions should please continue, you know, against South Africa, to place more pressure on the South African government to change.
See, what we need, what we all really need, is a focus. We need to know who are the companies, who are the organizations that we should be boycotting. I mean, look at the Nestle boycott. That worked very well, and it worked extremely well because we knew what they were culprits in, and we knew that they were culprits. Here, we're not sure. You know, are they divested? Are they not divested? There should be a very clear way of exchanging information so that we know exactly who to target.
The best organization in America is, as I mentioned, Trans Africa. And they're based in Washington, and you could look up their number, and that's run by Randall Robinson. And they are an organization that monitors the situation in South Africa, and they publish newsletters, and they're very influential in Washington. And if you know, need any information or any focus or in any direction, they would be the organization that could help you.
Craig, how long do you think apartheid would last if full sanctions were imposed from this country alone?
How long do you think it would last?
I mean, could it survive without U.S. support?
Well, the situation in South Africa, the economic situation, has deteriorated incredibly since I left. Because I know when I talk to my family, they say how things have risen, you know, unemployment's rising. You know, things have really got difficult since economic sanctions were imposed. And that's why the President de Klerk has been making these few changes. It's because of these economic sanctions. And the fact that South Africa is becoming more and more isolated in the international community. I feel that if we continue these economic sanctions, it will place more pressure on the government to make more changes, and that's the best thing we can hope for.
Okay, thanks very much for calling, man.
Thank you.
Okay, we have time for just one more call, and you are the lucky person. Good evening.
Oh, am I so happy I made it. Listen, I have a short comment. First of all, I've been enjoying your program tonight because I'm an insomniac, and I just want to tell you that, just two short comments. When I went to Washington, D.C. to be brief, they fitted me with underwear, and it seemed like the only time people really come together is when they have sex. And it's unfortunate that sex is an act of love, and the human race, after being on the earth for all these thousands of years, doesn't realize that the highest form of human intimacy is love. And sex is an act of love. And it's a shame that Jesus Christ taught this. He taught love. Study the scriptures. And the real message of the Bible is this: love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you want others to do unto you, and we are a brother's keeper. Or in other words, it's cheaper to be a brother's keeper, because if we all don't come together in the real sense of the word, we're going to perish in our own flames.
Okay, well, that's a very interesting note to end on, and I'm glad you called. Craig, any final comments from you?
I would just, like, as I said before, be very grateful for any support that people could come up with by, writing to their congress, local congressman, or contacting the American Civil Liberties Union in New York at 944-9800, or contacting any news media available to them to, spread, the word, about my situation, or, just generally the situation in South Africa. That would be really wonderful.
Okay, well, again, I want to thank you for staying up into the wee hours to talk to New York, because that's pretty much what we've been doing tonight. And wish you all the luck in the world as far as your particular case. Craig is, a draft dodger is what we would call him here in the United States.
I correct you. I prefer the word draft resister.
Yeah, draft resister. I mean, I guess that does have a better ring to it. And he faces 6 years in jail in South Africa if he is sent back to that country, and he's going down that road, so to say, in the United States, a judicial road that seems to want to send him back there. Hopefully that won't happen. Hopefully he'll get to stay here in New York and speak out against the sickness going on in South Africa, and even more hopefully something will change real soon over there. I want to thank everybody for calling up. I want to thank Craig for being with us tonight. And again, if you want to write into WBAI, if you like this program, please feel free to write in and say so. I'm Emmanuel Goldstein. Our address is WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. And my thanks to Tom Whisker, who has allowed me to fill in for him for the past 3 weeks. He will be back next week for the weaponry program. And he'll tell you all about the Arts and Crafts Festival, which is still going on. Go up there this weekend. It'll be the very last weekend this year for you to make it up to the Arts and Crafts Festival at Columbia University, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Again, thanks to everybody who called in. I want to wish everybody a very happy holiday season. Remember, stay happy, but also stay conscious. It's very important that we not lose sight of those things going on locally and going on around the world. That makes so much of a difference. Good night. I'm
want what's that? Watch this! This is the heavy, heavy monster style!
Monsters from the id.
Listen up, you groovy girls and jelly chicks. Here's a horror, here's a bubble, your blood.
I called up the monster DJ one night under a full moon. I said, please play something gruesome. I want to hear a scary tune. He said, hey man, that's my specialty. I can handle that request. Our shop corner howling is what I like to play the best.
The monster DJ is on the air, creeping into your home tonight. The monster DJ has got the sound to make you scream and fright.
He played Harry Bang and the Wolfman, the Ghoul and the Crypt King of Five, Mary Cemetery and the Tombstones with the hit.
How about that, Emmanuel Goldstein, anyway? I did a great show. Now he has to face the horror of traveling home at this hour of the night. Hi, this is Ed Banger once again here for Monsters from the Id on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Let's go straight to some music as we always start out with a lot of music, right? And we'll catch you a little later, okay? Right on. Something wrong? No. That's the way this song starts. I always forget that.